Chris Powell, writer for the Journal Inquirer, and I'm sure many of you feel the same way. And he's going to talk about the carnage in Connecticut cities, UConn, Lamont, many things. And there's one thing about Chris Powell that he was always right there. He wouldn't back down. And this is the reason he's had the following that he's got and has had over the years. Chris, you're going to meet my new partner, Gary Byron, who is with me now in the morning. And congratulations on what you have done and are continuing to do.
Oh, thank you very much, Brad.
Now, this whole situation that's going on in the state of Connecticut, how do you look at this? It's something that I have been looking at for quite a while, and I'm wondering when we were going to get back to what we really were and are.
I feel, Brad, that so much of our government and politics are just not relevant to what's really happening in the state. I wrote about the gun violence in the cities the other day to contrast it with the great gun legislation that Connecticut passed this year. The gun legislation program this year was to outlaw so-called ghost guns, which are guns with plastic guns without serial numbers, and require safe storage of firearms. And I just thought, these are hardly any issues at all. I mean, yes, a teenager died fooling around with guns a year or so ago, but kids fool around. That's not the bulk of our gun problem. The Connecticut Post reported the other day that Bridgeport had its 10th murder of the year on the 4th of July, and two other people in Bridgeport were shot that night, and that those shootings constituted more than 50 shootings for the year so far in Bridgeport. About the same time, three people were shot in Hartford, and I think I saw in the Current the other day three more people were shot. Ghost guns and safe storage are not our gun problem, Brad and Gary. The gun problem is a problem of social disintegration. It's a problem of demographics, which it seems to the governor and the legislature simply cannot discuss and address. And they congratulate themselves for their irrelevance with the legislation they passed, while the cities are having these shootings practically every day, and our government just doesn't see them.
In your opinion, Chris, do you find that gun laws predominantly affect only law-abiding citizens? Because those criminals that these laws are intended for, well, they're criminals. They don't pay attention to the laws. They disregard the laws, if you will.
Yeah, I'm not enthusiastic about, it goes by the name of gun control for that reason. Somebody who's intent on shooting somebody or robbing somebody, if he's not deterred by the law against murder, the law against robbery, I don't think he's going to be deterred by lesser laws, which gun control laws are lesser laws. I noticed that some jurisdictions really do not have much gun crime, and some other jurisdictions have a lot of gun crime, and I wish we could examine the differences between those jurisdictions and find out what the causes of this social disintegration in the violent jurisdictions are. This issue, the disintegration issue, it just can't get any attention. I imagine because if we ever addressed it, it would cause our government to question the premises of a number of policies that are very expensive but don't work.
Well, it's also a controversial issue.
Oh, yeah, it is. But, it's It's more controversial in the suburbs where, you know, people know how to behave, or most people know how to behave anyway. And then we have the poverty and despair and demoralization of the cities, where, you know, most young men grow up without fathers in the home, where so many people are dependent on welfare and have no serious job prospects and have no serious job skills, can't support themselves. You know, I was reading the famous comment by Daniel Patrick Moynihan 50 years ago, that if you let boys grow up without fathers, you get chaos. And you know, this was the insightful observation of a liberal Democrat 50 years ago. We are, you know, reaping what he saw, and yet we just don't address it in policy at all. And here, you know, 50 shootings so far this year in Bridgeport. I think six in Hartford in the last week, and they're telling us, oh, we've banned ghost guns, you know, we've required safe storage. It's a joke.
It's a disgrace, 50 already. We're only in July, early July at that, and there's already 50 in Bridgeport. What about New Haven or even Hartford? Do you have
figures? I haven't quantified them there yet. I was just reacting to the Connecticut Post story over the weekend about this that, you know, nobody pays any attention to in government. They, you know, we've outlawed ghost guns, and, you know, we're requiring safe storage.
Safe storage. What a joke that is.
Do you find that there is linkage between illegal gun use, or even illegal gun ownership, and narcotics, drugs?
Well, you know, look, I think most of the gun violence in the state seems to be connected to the drug trade. That's really one of the issues I think we ought to look at. Drug criminalization does not work. It does cause a lot of violence. I suspect that if we repealed drug criminalization and simply made treatment available to people on demand if they were addicts, we would have a lot less violence. We'd probably have marginally more drug addiction that we would have to treat. But if we were treating drug addiction instead of putting so much effort into criminal justice, maybe we could reduce it. I don't know, but I am convinced that a lot of the gun violence we have is a matter of drug criminalization. It pushes the drug trade underground and outside the law, and I don't think it works. I think I would be prepared to accept marginally more drug availability and the risk of addiction if we could at the same time eliminate the violence of the drug trade.
You know, when you take a look at Connecticut today, and I was born and raised here, when you take a look at Connecticut today compared to what it was at one time, right away you would say, we've lost it. I don't think we've lost it. I think we've lost discipline. We haven't done anything. Our leaders haven't done anything to go against what is going on. And I think the words that you used earlier this morning were the words that have to be used again. And then we can stop it.
Well, I think it's partly the corruption of prosperity, Brad. You know, civilizations, you know, work themselves up and have certain virtues, and they understand that not everything is free. You know, freedom certainly isn't free. And then they get prosperous, and they begin to think it's the natural order of things, when it was something that was, you know, very hardly earned by their ancestors, and you get corrupted. You think the world owes you a living, and you know, you do things you shouldn't do, and society declines. You're absolutely right that Connecticut's not what it used to be. You know, Bridgeport, which, you know, now is really a pit of poverty and despair and violence. It used to be the industrial capital of Connecticut and was a prosperous city through World War II. The radio station down there, WICC, the call letters stand for industrial capital of Connecticut, or they did. Same with Hartford. I wish our government would reflect on this.
What do you attribute that to?
I think
devolving.
We've certainly the industrial patterns around the world have changed. The simple manufacturing has migrated to jurisdictions with cheaper labor. That's natural. The problem is we have not kept up our educational system and not made people more able to compete in a world with more competition. I mean, look, something like 40% of the kids in Connecticut and nationally are growing up in a home without a father. Well, we know, even the liberal social science tells us that growing up without a father, growing up in a single parent household, correlates very strongly with physical and mental health problems, with educational failure, with proneness to crime, with unhappy lives. Do we do anything to understand what in government policy is contributing to the destruction of the family? I happen to think that welfare for childbearing outside marriage is a big part of the problem. I think it's the money that comes in when you have children outside marriage that facilitates that. I wish we would study that in a political sense, because the social science is telling us that. But okay, we've got 40% or more of the kids growing up in a single parent household without a father, something that Moynihan warned us against. Mm-hmm. 50 years ago. Our standardized tests show us every year that half to two-thirds of the kids graduating from high school in Connecticut have never mastered high school math or English, but we graduate them anyway. Our only serious educational policy in Connecticut is social promotion. Every kid knows that he will graduate from grade to grade and then be given a diploma in high school, even if he learns nothing, because we have decided that a kid's feelings are more important than whether he learns something.
Couldn't agree with you more.
And then we promote many of these kids into a public college where they take remedial high school courses.
Chris, I'm running out of time. No child left behind. Listen, in 30 seconds or less, I got one last question for you. I know what ghost guns are. When I was in the legislature, it came up, but we never voted on it. But they voted on it this year. In 30 seconds or less, please let our listeners know, what are ghost guns?
Oh, ghost guns are guns made of plastic from plastic molding machines that can fire a bullet, usually only one bullet. They're very inaccurate. They're really of not much use to criminals. They're bulky. There are people who are worried they're going to get through metal detectors onto airplanes, but they're not why, Bridgeport is a shoot 'em up every
Unreal.
Day.
Yeah, people make them at home through the material that they send out, comes through the mail. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. We are running tight on time. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Chris.
No, thank you, guys.